What if there's no way of moving back? What when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange.
And good evening, Sam Steele with you here. Sam, the animal Steele. I'm Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Wishing you well on this chilly Saturday evening. Tonight, I got a co-host in the studio, Erica Jane. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing well. Erica Jane and I played in a band together. I guess we technically still do play in a band together. It's never disbanded.
It's true.
It's true. That band would be known as Red Honey because she's got the red hair. Actually, the Red Honey, I always thought it was because of you. But Red Honey was a psychedelic honey from, like, Peru or something?
Nepal.
Nepal.
Like in the Himalayan mountains.
The Himalayan hallucinogenic honey.
Yeah, because of the bees.
The bees.
Because they're special bees. So, anyways.
Yeah. So, Erica Jane is going to be sitting in tonight on Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual, and hopefully we will have some interesting topics. One of the topics we are going to hit on tonight has been unbeknownst to me. You brought it up to me last night on the phone. You're like, hey, well, what do you know about this? And I was like, I know nothing about, and it had to do with Sasquatch, sort of, kind of. Because let me just say, prefaces, Erica Jane loves Sasquatches.
I do. I love.
She does.
The Sasquatch.
And why do you like the Sasquatch so much?
Why do I like the Sasquatch so much? Because I love all of the mythology from so many cultures that talks about it. And I like thinking about, you know, how the Earth has been changing and animals are going extinct. And what if it is just like the rarest of the rare species still on our planet?
It's kind of big to be the rarest of the rare.
Well,
I mean, true. I mean, have they found a new monkey or something, you know, the other year.
They called him Sam Steele.
Sam the Animal Steele. So, I mean, I'm not discounting the fact that a Sasquatch could, and you know, like in different cultures, you have the Yeti, the Sasquatch. You have the, what's the, another name? There's in Siberia or something.
Oh.
The Abominable Snowman.
There's so many names, yeah.
So many. So what was this offshoot theory that, you know, you had brought up to me that I found quite interesting?
Well, some time ago, I've kind of, you know, it's like when you get into something, like the Sasquatch, you start watching videos.
You go down the wormhole.
You go down the wormhole. So I went down the wormhole, and it took me to this place that talked about people missing from the national forests.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was, you know, people, it is like, is the Sasquatch taking the little boys?
Much like what people falling off of waterfalls every year, people go missing in the national forests every year.
Yeah.
Where are they going?
Where are they going? Who are they? Are they being documented? The national forests are governed by the national government. So it's not the local government. So you don't have the local police force documenting things and handling things the same way. Or at least they weren't. So there's this guy named David Paulides, and he used to be a cop. And he started just digging into this. Somebody asked him because they were looking for a loved one that had been lost in the woods. And what he found was really fascinating and kind of creepy. I don't know where to go from Sam.
So this is I'm reading this off of Vice's motherboard, and they're talking about how America's national parks became hotbeds of paranormal activity, how Bigfoot and aliens have come to overshadow the government's aging database of missing persons cold cases. And it's very interesting when you start going down this rabbit hole or wormhole, and you know, they talk about some of these people that you know, where have they gone? Who are they? And what was one of the other things you were telling me that ties a lot of these cases together, or similarities between a lot of them, is that, like, the people who go missing tend to turn up. Like, they're not always dead.
No, sometimes they turn up. They usually find their shoes somewhere that's far away from where they're found. In, like, it'll be in, like, a crazy blizzard snowstorm, you know, 15 miles away, and the person's feet are not.
And they would.
And it's always near running water.
Like a dog dying.
What?
I always heard the dogs die. That's what my mom told me when my dog went missing. She's like, she just went to the running creek. So the genesis of this movement belongs to David Politis, a cryptozoologist with a self-described law enforcement and investigative background. And he had written a book that you had told me about, Missing 411, Western United States and Canada, Unexplained Disappearances of North Americans That Have Never Been Solved.
Never been solved.
Never been solved. Now, this comes from that book. This is a conversation he claims to have had with a national park ranger. Quote, I sat in my room at the lodge and listened to the ranger tell me about a series of missing people inside our national parks. The ranger stated that the events were very unusual. Many people were never found, and the Park Service was doing everything possible to keep a lid on the publicity surrounding the missing. He explained that non-law enforcement employees were not privy to all the information, but the upper echelon law enforcement supervisors inside the Park Service were concerned about the numbers and certain facts surrounding specific cases. Now, this guy is apparently the foremost expert in national park disappearances, knocking me off the throne.
Well, he has written at least 4 books.
At least. I'm still working on my first pamphlet.
We'll do it later.
Yes.
After the
and
show.
He claims to have spent 7,000 hours researching cases, interviewing families, law enforcement, search and rescue personnel, looking over newspaper archives, and submitting hundreds of Freedom of Information Act requests. And the thing is that this guy, David Politis, is also a Bigfoot chaser.
He is. Yes, yes. That's how we connected in spirit, or rather, I became, you know, a huge fan of his.
And some people are fans, and some people, you know, apparently kind of think that, you know, he might be a little bit wonky or whatever because he thinks that Bigfoot or something else is abducting people. And when he's not investigating missing persons, he's working on the North American Bigfoot Search. That's a group that he founded to legitimize the cryptid's existence. In 2013, he submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the National Park Service for records relating to 2 missing hikers right around in our backyard in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park associated with a possible Bigfoot abduction.
Yeah. You know, there's maps that I've come across that detail, you know, where all of these abductions are happening, and they're always in the national parks, in the mountains, always in the mountains. Whoa. And there are so many little flags right, you know, in our area, in our backyard.
The mountains,
oh, my God.
As opposed
it's so
to,
crazy.
Like, the hipster Bigfoots of Red Hook, Brooklyn. Or, I mean, you know, like, it seems like logical that if there is a large hairy mammal, it would probably hide out.
That's true. It does seem logical.
I got to think of that guy's name. We had on a couple weeks ago, we had on some guys who had some really interesting Bigfoot encounters, and they were relaying some of these stories to us. And it was pretty wild, you know, some of the stuff that they had seen and were telling us, especially off the air, that certain things they didn't want to share on the air. But it was some very interesting stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
So this guy made a documentary. And I think in the next segment, we're going to try to listen to some audio clips and whatnot. Missing 411. And he's been on George Norrie's Coast to Coast AM several times, which Mr. Joshua P. Warren, a frequent guest on throughout the years.
Aw.
Yes. So, David Politis, interesting guy. The more up until last night, all of this had sort of been off my radar, and I'm into, like, weird stuff, and I'm always reading stories, and I would not say Bigfoot's my wheelhouse of paranormal things or oddities, you know, get me down certain other roads, but this is not my area of expertise. They would say, you're no Paulides. I might not even be an Erica Jane. I don't know. But apparently people are vanishing near water, like you said. That's unremarkable. Water-related accidents are a common cause of death in the outdoors because people are drunk and dumb. And a lot of times the rocks are slippery. And people from out of state, you know, it's never like people from Brevard that are like on Bridal Veil Falls, like, you know, looking. It's always somebody from New Jersey.
Aww.
I know, and God bless them.
God bless them.
But it happens every year, you know, and drowning has remained the number one cause of death in the national park over the last decade. However, there are some other weird disappearances. Paulides described people melting into their clothing. He posits that children with disabilities are overrepresented amongst the vanished and that storms inexplicably tend to hit after someone has gone missing.
Uh-huh.
Now, why would that be?
Well, that could be, I don't know, like a portal to another dimension and the energy of all of that, bloop, you know, and then thunder and lightning.
Now, have you heard this, that people disappear and are found in the middle of berry bushes?
Where they couldn't even get to.
I mean,
right?
You would think, I mean, berries are delicious. They go missing while picking berries, and then some are found while eating berries. Crunch berries? No. The connection between some disappearances and berries cannot be denied. That's a direct quote from Paulides. Now, he never explains what these clusters mean or what's causing so many people to vanish. You ever read the magazine Outdoors? Or Outside, I'm sorry. There was a story that was published in Outside magazine that puts the number at 1,600 individuals that have gone missing in the National Parks Service that are unaccounted for.
In what period of time?
Why you gotta ask me? I can find out, but we're coming up.
I want solid facts.
We're coming up on a break. I will research that in the break.
All right, good.
Gracious me, I tell you what. You are listening to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570, where the unusual becomes usual. Sam the Animal Steel sitting here with Erica Jane, my former, or I guess, you know, my current bandmate in Red Honey. I'm taking this out. Remember this song? You remember this song?
Oh, do I?
Mm-hmm. It's the Pyramids.
Yeah.
Penetration. Yeah, we used to play this. We used to play this song a lot.
I think I played the tambourine. I think you rocked the bass on this.
It was usually the first song of the second or third set. Dun, dun. Brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Make your reservations online at HauntedAsheville.com. Speaking of strange, we'll be right back.
Shake my
It's Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Sam the Animal Steel with you here, joined by Erica Jane. We were just listening to some Red Honey there. That was our band. That was you singing. We're on, it's sort of like I'm like a 16th year sophomore in college. Like, technically, I'm like red shirting. I could still play collegiate ball. You know, I just took a long hiatus. And I guess that's what the band's done. You know, like, we're on a break.
Yeah, we just needed a break.
Yeah, have you ever been on these, on a Haunted Asheville tour?
No, but I really want to go.
You know, like, they've gotten written up in National Geographic, Best Outdoor Adventures. You know, it's like this, you experience the, I did it a couple years ago, I think 2 years ago, and I learned a lot, and I've lived here for almost 30 years.
I want to go.
You work downtown, and we used to practice right there next in the legal building or next to the Jackson building or whatever.
Yeah. Well, our first spot was in the Jackson building.
And that's supposed to be haunted.
I definitely had some moments like where I heard things in the bathroom or the water fountain going off. It was because we were there at night all the time, you know?
Yes, and we were the only people in this building, and we had the keys.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's an old building. And, yes. Like, remember that night that we made it all the way to the top? That was pretty cool.
Don't get us busted.
I know. Somebody stole my pedal board. There's three different tours that you can do. I did the classic walking tour, and it's about a two-hour tour. That's good if you've got the kids, you know. You
could. I don't do that. How long is that?
It's a two-hour tour.
Two-hour tour?
Yeah, a two-hour tour. It would be great for the girls. Then they also have a new tour, the Supernatural Tour, and also the Biltmore Village Mystery Tour.
Ooh, the Supernatural one sounds cool.
Yeah, that is vampires, witches, ghouls. What is the true agenda of the Freemasons? Why is a witch's tree in our city county plaza? I couldn't give you the answer to that.
The magnolia.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Did you know that there was a bizarre creature that terrorized our jail inmates in 1908?
Really?
Apparently so. I don't know the answer to
Probably it. Probably a Sasquatch.
And this tour, that the paranormal tour, or the supernatural tour, I'm sorry, focuses less on ghosts and more on the historical origins of the early settlers of Asheville and the superstitions, rituals, customs, and folklore that they brought with them.
Do you know what? The other day, the guy that manages our building, the office manager guy, he was like, guess what's in the basement? And I was like, what? And
the guy from the Goonies.
Ah, you're funny. No, it was it's an old embalming table, like made from concrete, like from the turn of the century. I mean, we're in like one of the very oldest buildings in Asheville. It's like 1880
it's like right there
or something.
Right there on Pack Square.
Yeah, and it's down in the basement. We went to look, and there's like
I don't want to go down to the basement.
Oh my god, it's so scary!
Did
I don't want to go back. No.
Why not?
There was a rat that ran across the floor, and then I was like, I gotta.
Did
go.
You take pictures?
I did. I think I took a couple pictures.
Of the embalming table?
Yeah. I think I did. I feel like I did.
I used to live at the Kenilworth Inn, the historic.
Did you really?
Yes.
So did my friend Hillary.
Back in the day, when I delivered pizza parallels, as Vance would say, I used to, like, back then, it was closed. You know, it was just like an abandoned, closed-off building. And yeah, it was terrifying. Like, I would go get lost up in Kenilworth. This is pre-GPS. You'd get, like, an address, and you'd just be driving around up in there, and you'd get lost up in the hills. And I'd be like, oh, God, no. Oh, no. And I'd be up at the old hospital, you know. It was like a hospital in World War I, World War II. I don't know how many people died in that building. But now it's on the historic registry. They charged out the butt to live there, which is why I ended up having to leave that. And there was no insulation in the floors. However, the lady was above me rocking high heels at 6 a.m. doing, like, jumping jacks. I'm like, oh, my God. It was very loud. But the beautiful floors, don't get me wrong.
Did you have experiences, though?
I did not. Now, there was apparently two little girls. Like, we had a bowling alley down in the basement. It was not a functional bowling alley. It was, like, from back in the day. Like, what do they call it? Like, duck pin bowling or something.
That sounds charming.
With the wood ball, and like somebody would go behind and set up the pins. Mm-hmm. There were supposedly two little girls, all of The Shining. haunted that area that must have died or something. And then there was a doctor. Let's see, I was on the third floor. I think there was a four floors. There was supposedly a doctor on the fourth floor that hung himself. And, like, right above me, I think, not too far. But, like, a lot of people would come in, and they would just get freaked out by that building because the long corridors with, like, in the slight crookedness to the floor because it was old and all the lights. It looked a lot like The Shining. And, you know, I had friends who were there when it was, like, a mental hospital and stuff, and they'd come up there and be like, that's where the nurse's station was, and I can hear the screaming.
Who are these friends? Oh, my goodness.
I'm not going to out them on the show. Anyway, make your reservations as you veer off. Gracious. As you veer off, make your reservations, book now, because these tours do go fast at hauntedashville.com if you want to go. We were talking about America's national forests. We were talking about people who have gone missing in these national forests. You asked me right at the end of the last segment, what time frame was it where these people went missing? And I'm like, great, thank you for asking. Let me look that up. So during the break, I tried, and what I got was hundreds of people per year. I couldn't get an actual number.
That are never found.
Well, this says hundreds of people a year reported missing in national parks and forests. Most are eventually found, but there's a smaller category of cases that are never solved. And a lot of them, there's a disproportionate amount that are children aged 20 months to 12 years and the elderly, 74 to 85. Now, did you ever see that movie Bubba Hotep?
No.
It was about a Hotep, you know, this Egyptian, like, ghost phantom thing that was sucking the souls out of old people in nursing homes because they were easy prey. And, like, that's how it needed to live. That was its fuel. And it was fought off by JFK and Elvis, played by Ossie Davis and Bruce Campbell. It was awesome. Awesome movie. But do you think that maybe that the young and the old go missing because they, you know, they're weaker or not as able to be alive in the woods or, I don't know. Not one person carrying a firearm and only one carrying a transponder device has disappeared. So I guess your chances go way up if you're packing heat.
If you're packing heat.
If you're packing heat, which I don't know if you're allowed to do in the National Forest.
I don't know about that either.
We'll have to get on that during
the
commercial.
No, actually, I do know about that from a Red Honey video, and we might have broken a little law about that. I just remember, we were there with the cop.
Yeah. Not supposed to. Okay. Typically, apparently, search parties will last about 10 days. So if you disappear in the forest, try to get found. Not too long, much longer than a week.
And people will be found a week later or wander up, you know, being gone and just not remember anything. They say, like, a lot of the people are wearing red. That's a common sort of thing.
I saw red.
And if there's, like, small dogs, they usually go, like, running off into the woods and then they disappear. Like, the dog leads the human to the possibly Sasquatch.
Now, we haven't yet gotten to how the Sasquatch potentially ties in to, I mean, as of right now, it's just people who have gone missing.
True.
Now, up until this point, we have not even discussed the possibility of why they've gone missing could potentially be a large ape-like creature. Just as of right now, people are going missing.
Right,
now,
that's
true. You've said that there is a light, it's like a connection, but it's hard to make the pinpoint.
Yes.
So in the next segment, as we're coming up on a break here, we're going to look into how does the Sasquatch tie in to all these people who are missing? 50% of the children who go missing are found dead, and the ones who are found miles away from where they disappeared in areas seemingly impossible to get to on their own. How does that even happen? The hand of a Sasquatch? What's the Sasquatch doing with them?
I don't know. Let's talk about it.
We'll have to find out after the break. You are listening to Speaking of Strange, where the unusual becomes usual, here on News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. We will be back right after this, maybe find out more about how a Sasquatch ties in to missing people in our national forests. Where are they going and why? We'll be right back. Radio 570 WWNC, where the unusual becomes usual. Sam the Animal Steel joined tonight by Erica Jane. She is red. She's got red hair. I don't know. And she's in Red Honey. She's the lovely singer in Red Honey that might eventually make some new music again.
It's true.
It's true. So we left off, and we've been talking, if you're just now hopping in, we've been talking about the abnormally large amount of people who have gone missing in national forests. And didn't you find like a number, like when you were saying about what was that time period? 1,600 people is the number that keeps popping up. You'd found like since X amount of time.
It was something about, well, hold on here.
It was a decent amount of years. I mean, it wasn't like.
It wasn't like 1997 or something. I mean,
it was over 20 years.
Yes.
But that's still a very high number. Now, a lot of the stuff that we are reading comes from a guy named David Pilatus, who you had turned me on to. He's got a documentary called, was it Missing 411?
Yes, Missing 411, and he's written multiple books, and he continues to bring awareness
to, you know, this.
This phenomenon.
He posits his theory is that there is something sinister, perhaps even supernatural, to what these people that are going missing. And he says that he's got this thing called clusters. Clusters are commonalities in time, place, circumstance that he claims are clues to a larger mystery. Some clusters, you know, we discussed the people vanishing near water, or you know, other clusters are even weirder than that. You know, the berry bushes, stuff like that. Here we pull up some audio. This is David Pilatus talking about those clusters.
Well, I think that's part of the uniqueness to it, is that many of them are national parks, and the biggest cluster in the world of missing people that fit the profile, Yosemite National Park. And then as you follow the Cascades further north, you can go right up through Oregon and Washington and find a series of national parks and forests that have these clusters in them. And it can't be refuted, because there are these same missing persons cases there where people have never been found. And I think the commonality at the beginning was national forests, and we slowly started to disperse out and figure that, well, national forests have it, and even some rural areas have the same thing. And in Canada, there's national parks that fit this criteria as well. So National Parks, forests, and rural areas are covered in this book.
That is David Pilatus there, the author of the books that we've been talking about, Missing 411 Hunters. He's got several different volumes of that book. Now, we were going to talk about how does the Sasquatch, your beloved, your beloved Sasquatch, fit into this puzzle? What would you think, you know, because as of now, we've got some, we don't know what these clusters mean. People are going missing. Rural areas, old and young, are the most likely. Berry bushes to be avoided.
Berry bushes to be avoided. And they're usually, they usually go missing where they shouldn't. You know, they're like surrounded by people or something. It's not, it's like in an area where they should have been seen. The canines can't find a scent. The areas, like when they're found, the area's always been previously searched. And they're often found near water.
Now, this is something that Pilatus did discover that is rather spooky, something that's a little bit more disturbing than a, you know, mythical man-ape stealing children away from their parents. It's that the National Park Service does not keep track of missing persons. It doesn't know how many individuals have disappeared in its parks.
That's, I know, that is, like, so alarming. That
well, there's
fact.
A lot of alarming things about the National
yes.
Parks, like that they're getting... That we might lose the national parks, but that's a whole nother story. That most of our national parks are well behind in maintenance and stuff, so I can see, and they're well understaffed as well. So you know, these park rangers and stuff, they got a lot on their plates, and it's like, you know, you got your day to day operations, then you also got man apes.
Well, but they keep track of which movies are filmed on the national park. They have records that show. And that's something that they log. So you would think that they might want to keep track of people that go missing. You know, if they were going to prioritize, you know, movies made here or people that disappeared that have never been found again.
Well,
or
there has been some really good movies made.
Yes.
I mean, let's not.
Let's make the movie list. That sounds like way more fun.
The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games.
Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, I was going to say that one. When I first moved here, that was one of the first things we did was we went down Charlotte Street and we watched some of the filming of Last of the Mohicans.
Really?
Yeah, there was no Daniel Day-Lewis scenes. But, I mean, I'd only been here for like a couple weeks, so it was pretty exciting.
Wow, that's cool.
Later on, I would see, you know, the rock out there, Chimney Rock, you know.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know if I ever saw the movie, though. But, so this is David Pilatus, his documentary, Missing 411. In that, there's an interview with a then Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar, who oversaw the National Park Service. He got asked that same question. How many people have gone missing from national parks? Salazar apparently replied, visibly uncomfortable, that he does not recall. that no records, no responsive records, does the National Park Service keep. So...
So alarming. It just makes me giggle. I get so nervous and uncomfortable.
She does. We were talking about this off the air, and I was like, you know, you just pull up some. And she's like, I get a little scared. I get a little scared reading about this. But you're on Speaking of Strange. This is where the unusual becomes usual. So you need to buck up, Buttercup.
Word up.
Back to the Sasquatch. How does the Sasquatch tie in to this? Is it some phenomenon where, you know, I mean, we have around here, we have the Brown Mountain Lights, which Joshua P.
Yes.
Warren has, but the, you know, he's documented that on several, different in books and documentaries, but people are not vanishing due to the Brown Mountain Lights. They're just odd lights.
No, but that's like, you know, that area has similarities to where a lot of these missing people are found or, well, basically, they're super rocky, super steep. You shouldn't, you know, sometimes these kids will go missing and they're found like 20 miles away in the most remote area, all uphill. They would have had to like cross many mountains to get to the tops of these really rocky places. And a lot of times these rocky places have the name Devil in their title, you know?
Like Devil's Courthouse?
Yes, or you know... Devil's Playground, Devil's Garden. I mean, there's so, like, it's a common common similarity in most of the 411 cases. Like,
so yeah, back to the 411. You know, let's not forget that Pilatus is also, he is a cryptozoologist, and so that, you know, might lead to some of his inclinations to the Bigfoot theory. But he noticed some trends in those death by falling. Okay, that's probably pretty common in national forests. Animal attacks. Don't yeah. walk around with beef jerky in your pockets.
Even though it's delicious.
It's delicious. Exposure to the elements or illness. But there were some stories that he thought defied simple explanation of people vanishing into thin air that were there 1 minute and gone the next. Other stories involved tracking dogs that were brought in that either couldn't or wouldn't hunt for the missing. Other disappearances seem to occur more frequently near areas heavy with boulders or, again, close to berry patches. Did you get that? Close to berry patches. And then, you know, the phenomenon of people being located after they disappeared at much higher elevations. Mm-hmm. This case, there was a toddler, probably picking berries because its parents aren't paying any attention.
And they're also delicious.
Toddlers are delicious. The toddler was found 12 miles away from where he vanished. A journey that would have had the two-year-old traversing two mountain ranges and crossing over fences and through creeks.
Through cricks.
Perhaps a person abducted the boy and abandoned him?
That's a possibility.
But why? Now, you know, this is where the Bigfoot comes in. Or some other large animal or wild man, like the Wendigo.
The Yeti.
Well, I don't know. If you were. The Yeti, if you were. One family recounted a story of watching a little girl walk into the forest only to vanish with no trace. Now, you've mentioned this offhandedly, I don't think with much thought. portals into other dimensions. that could be a possibility. But, I mean, you know, I mean, now we're kind of stretching stuff. I mean,
That's true. Let's bring it back.
I mean, now we're into some, like, straight up, what was that? Fringe. Remember, that was a great show. But, yeah, portals to other dimensions or Bigfoots. We are going to find out on the other side of the break as we'll delve into the last segment of the hour on people missing in national forests. Don't pick berries. Don't wear red.
Take a transmitter.
Take a transmitter or a firearm.
It does say that.
And don't be young, like a baby or an old person.
Yeah.
Yeah, those would be the
call. Leave your dog at home.
Leave the dog at home?
There's something that it's a thing.
Cluster?
It happens in the clusters.
When we looked at the map, Western North Carolina is...
right in the thick of it. I know. It makes my hair stand up.
It's not standing up, people. I'm looking right at it right now. She is fibbing. You're listening to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, brought to you by HauntedAsheville.com. Log on to HauntedAsheville.com and book now. These tours sell out quick. Maybe they'll talk about Yetis and Sasquatches. If you ask them, they're very knowledgeable guides. We'll be right back.
Save it.
You are listening to Speaking of Strange, the final segment of Hour 1 on News Radio 570 WWNC. Sam the Animal Steele, joined by Erica Jane, mumbling some gibberish nonsense over there.
I am not.
Yeah, you didn't hear
how
what
rude.
You didn't hear what was going on.
I'm offended.
In the break there, she's like, hey, in the Sasquatch.
Do you treat all your guests like this?
Then the Sasquatch had
Where's
a sack.
The sweet tea.
Anyway. So, one of the things here, you know, we were trying to tie in how does, you know, as we wrap up this segment in this hour, how does the Sasquatch tie into that? And really, the answer is nobody knows, because this is all speculative phenomena. People go missing all the time, and there's not always answers. I mean, even if you're, like, leaving the Walmart tonight, you might see on the wall there's, like, missing people. You know, they still have those things, like...
Yes.
They used to have them at the post office when we were growing up, you know, the missing
people. Yes, yes.
And where do those people go? I mean, some of them don't want to be found. You know, but some of them...
Well, and a lot of times they're kids, and that's like...
Yeah. And, you know, so you see that, and you're like, you know, who are these people? You know, what if that was your family member or your loved one? These people just go missing. There's not always explanations to things. That's why some things are, you know, strange or, you know, and then you can start putting all sorts of different labels on it, paranormal, supernatural. You can start tying in... Sasquatches and whatnot. One theory that I came across is similar to like a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch theory, but it's that of wild men. And I don't mean like party boys. I don't mean like dudes, bros on spring break. No, like wild men that, you know, have lived in the woods, sort of like... you know, I almost, they say here, according to some eyewitnesses, these wild men, like bear skins, feral humans, and this is even in our backyard in the Great Smoky Mountains National Forest, and especially in this case, if you want to read up on it, read up on the disappearance of Dennis Martin. It's an interesting, and that's one of the bigger cases. It's like a four-year-old kid, just bam, gone. Now, and that was like right on the Pigeon River. You know?
Yeah, just over yonder.
And so they heard a scream and observed a rough-looking man. Now, that could mean a lot of things. I have been a rough-looking man. Until I shaved today, I was looking pretty rough. I'm not going to lie. But these are like feral men. Now, you asked, like, what's the difference? Like, that sounds like a Sasquatch to me. You know, like a hairy guy living out in the woods. But I think a Bigfoot has more... ape-like
characteristics, physically, yes.
And you know, one of these eyewitnesses who had seen one of these wild men had him in the scope of his rifle, and was like, I couldn't pull the trigger because there was too many similarities to a human. I couldn't, like, in good conscience, pull the trigger because it felt like I was going to be shooting a man, and I couldn't do that. But he was scared to death, and there's like this dude, like all hairy and like. Out of nowhere in the woods, making this horrible squeal, you know. But I think they portray more human characteristics. But the idea of feral wild men foraging and thieving from hikers in national forests is actually not too far off base. I mean,
it seems like it could. It could definitely be happening, you know, when you, like, think about the facts. And some of the physical characteristics that they talk about, you know, are how. The Sasquatch can jump down cliffs and climb trees with ease, and they can, because their footbed is like that of an ape, they can really, really climb up treacherous mountains so quickly. It's like they move so quickly.
I mean,
have you ever seen a bear? Like, you know.
I have.
I lived in Colorado, and we would have bears that would come through the backyard. They can move fast.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh, you know, you kind of think, oh, a bear lumbering.
No, I've never thought that.
Oh, my God. It's so scary. And a Sasquatch, when you think about the physical leg range of, say, a bear, and the size of a Sasquatch, and being, you know, long-legged like a human, if they what they do is they just go right up the mountain, shoop, shoop, shoop.
That wouldn't explain, though, anything that has to do, like, a bear wouldn't take a kid
And no.
No, a bear would eat a kid like a mug. He'd just be like, rawr, rawr,
rawr, rawr. Delicious.
Delicious child.
Berries next.
Yeah. But I don't think they would have the presence of mind to be like, I'm going to deposit this.
No.
If they did, that would be a pretty spectacular bear.
The child is riding the bear in my mind. Just kidding.
Riding a bear.
Not like that, Sam. No, no.
We'll save that for the dark 30 hour, Erica.
Whoa.
Yes, that is the 11 o'clock hour. All right, we're coming up on our final break of the hour. Anything you want to wrap up here? Anything you want to...
Okay, let's just say physical characteristics of a Sasquatch being different than a human so that they can travel quickly across mountains.
Okay.
Carrying...
If you're in the national forest, carry a gun. Don't pick berries.
And a transmitter. That's not a cell phone.
Well, how many people... A transmitter. You know how much an EPIRB costs? Like,
I know.
That's a personal like beacon that you would carry.
A what?
An EPIRB.
No, I do
Never
not.
Never mind. You're listening to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, where the unusual becomes usual. Hour two is coming up next. Stick around. We'll be right back.